Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast. I'm Shannon Curtis.
And I'm Jamie Hill. Hello, everybody. And hello, Shannon.
Hello, Jamie.
How you doing?
I'm really good. I've had a good day.
Seriously? How come?
I've been booking some personal songs for stuff. I've been, had a great podcast interview for someone else's podcast earlier today.
You've been just like podcasting all day.
Yeah.
You were telling me that you moved this podcast host to tears.
Yeah, I think he got a little emotional during part of our podcast. Like, I didn't make him cry,
You weren't mean to him. Yeah. You weren't, like, talking shit about his mom or something.
No, we were talking about house concerts, and it made him emotional. It was fun.
That's wonderful.
It was a meaningful moment. So I've had a great day.
House concerts are meaningful and emotional.
They are.
The whole experience, the community around it, it's great.
Yeah. How are you doing?
Doing good. Also having a cool day. I have just been busily setting up my mastering thing. Oh, hey, by the way, before I even get into that, I should just say later in this episode, we're going to talk about power and powerlessness.
That's right.
So listeners, hey, heads up, that's coming. It's going to be a good discussion,
That's the theme today.
I've been getting my mastering thing ready to go.
Awesome.
It's really like it's a little side business, kind of, really.
Yeah.
Will be. It's cool.
All of our businesses are side businesses.
True. Yeah. The main business is trying to stay alive and keep our bills paid.
Yeah, that's right. Everything else
is just like appurtenant to that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I'd like to also welcome our new listeners and thank our new supporters. Had a couple new supporters this week.
We did.
Very exciting. Yeah, including a very dear old friend of mine.
Aww.
It is always so meaningful to me when somebody like who I know personally and have for a long time chips into the podcast and becomes like a paid subscriber, a supporter. It's always just like really humbling, you know?
I totally know what you mean.
I've known this guy since like 1997.
Oh, that's so cool.
Seriously, he's one of my absolute dearest friends. Shout out to Mark, a.k.a. Ill Medium. he has a hip-hop name because I met him in hip-hop circles. He's an absolutely unbelievably talented DJ, like a scratch DJ and producer and songwriter and just... great.
Yeah, I know what you mean by like it feeling extra meaningful. I mean, it's meaningful when anybody supports what we're doing, but like when personal friends are also like, By the way, I love that coffee slurping sound on the microphone.
That's
really special. Yeah. Anyway, when people support
There's going to be more. I've got a whole cup. Misfit Stars mug, by the way. It's relevant.
Maybe the only reason it's acceptable for you to be making slurping noises on your microphone.
These slurping noises brought to you by Misfit Stars.
Oh my gosh. So thank you to our new supporters.
Yeah.
Thank you to our new listeners. Speaking of our supporters, we've been rolling out all of the new supporter level merch.
Yeah.
So those of you who were previously at the $20 level, which was the t-shirt level, you should have gotten your Misfit Stars mug by now.
You should have.
If you have been at the $10 level, which previously was the sticker sheet level, you should be getting a t-shirt.
Most of them should have arrived by now. Some probably still on the way.
Which means I want photos of your t-shirts in our Misfit Stars group. What is even wrong with you people?
Seriously.
Yeah.
We just send you a t-shirt and you don't even send like a picture. How did your grandmother raise you?
We want a cute pic of you in your t-shirt.
We're not even asking for a thank you note. handwritten and addressed to Misfit Stars, 2522 North Proctor Street, number 92, Tacoma, Washington, 90406.
That's because the t-shirt is the thank you that we're giving them for supporting our podcast.
That's
why.
Right.
But we would love to see your photos. And those of you who have been at the $5 level, we just took something to the mailbox yesterday for you.
Whoa. And also the $3 level.
All
y'all grandfathered people who have been supportive of us for so long in this group that you're in at $3.
Yeah.
You got the sticker.
That's right.
I can't say.
You are not good at secrets.
I'll edit that out.
You're not good at surprises.
Okay, I'll edit it out. I'll leave it in, but I'll put a beep. Hold on one sec. Beep. That way, I'll be able to edit it back over.
Oh my gosh.
It's going to be so cool.
You're ridiculous.
Thank you.
Anyway, so we took some stuff to the mailbox yesterday for you all. And really, just because... like we changed all the supporter levels because we really wanted the opportunity to be able to say a bigger thank you to more people.
Yeah.
Because you all are the engine that makes this podcast fly.
Yep.
And we are aware of that all the time and wanted to make sure that you knew how much we appreciate you and the support that you offer us. So thank you.
Thank you.
And if you are listening and you're like, wait, a supporting member, I could, what does that mean?
Oh my gosh.
Then you could become one.
It means fame and fortune.
And here's how you do it. You go to misfitstars.com/join. Mm-hmm. And you join. You pick your support level.
Yeah.
And there are goodies involved, which we will send you when you pick your support level.
Yeah. Everyone gets goodies now.
Everyone gets goodies. And a couple other cool things is that you will get added to our private Facebook group.
Yeah.
Which
we'll
is
invite
awesome.
You.
We'll invite you.
You
to
could
that.
Decline if you, you want. You don't have to.
It's true. But you'll be invited to join that group. It's for members only. And also, you will be among the group of people who suggests topics for this podcast, which we do from time to time.
Yep.
We've got a list of listener topics that we have yet to get to, but we always are looking for more.
It is so true.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this and you're like, you know what? I like Shannon and Jamie and I would like them to have $5 a month of mine because I believe in what they do and I think they would do good things with it. First of all, thank you. That's why everyone else who has become a supporting member has done so. And we're so grateful for all of you. And second of all, if you want to do it, go to misfitstars.com/join. If you're listening to this and you're already a subscribing member, first of all, thank you so much, supporters. Mm-hmm. And second of all, if you're listening to this and going, hey, you know, I'm in at $5, but I really want to be at 10 now because that's not that much more. I can afford it. And I get a t-shirt. Holy cow, that's so reasonable.
Yeah.
Just go to misfitstars.com/level up.
There you go.
No big deal.
Level up.
Yep, just level up.
Awesome.
Yep.
Very
cool.
So,
what did we do this week?
Yeah, well, last week we came to you from Vermont. That was like the whole other side of the country from where we are now, back at home in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
We had the most epically long travel day home. Like
it
we were
wild.
Already supposed to have like a 3.5 hour layover in North Carolina. And then we got on the plane and we sat on the plane and then they were like, everybody off the plane. And we had a new plane.
We were like all the way out to the runway and they had to like turn us around. They're like, the plane's broken actually.
So glad they figured that out though.
Yeah.
But so we ended up having like, you know, it felt like Tom Hanks in that movie being stuck in the airport length of a layover.
Yeah. It was kind of nice, honestly. Yeah. We were in Charlotte and they have a really nice kind of newer, like redone airport.
Yeah.
And a great, really nice food court playing oldies, AKA music from our generation.
That's the thing. Like I was like standing in the line to get our shake at the Shake Shack. And because it was, you know, when you're at an airport layover, the thing you do is you just go from place to place eating things.
Yeah.
That's what you do. So we were standing in line for the shake at the Shake Shack and I'm like, oh my gosh, check out this 80s music they're playing. This is good stuff. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm their target demographic,
for
which probably means I'm middle-aged.
It's exactly,
and there we go.
It's exactly the same time difference as when I remember being with my dad, like in the mid 80s and him singing along with 50s music in the grocery.
That's exactly
the same,
is.
Like 30 year difference.
You know what?
It's really messed up.
It's cool. I like being middle-aged.
I'll say this.
I embrace it.
80s music's a whole hell of a lot better than 50s music.
Well, you know, 50s music is great, but 80s music is special.
50s music is great, but they only wrote two songs. Then everyone did their own version of those two songs.
That's true.
There was the up-tempo number, and then there was the down-tempo number in 6.
That's it.
Those are the only two songs.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. But yeah, that was the epically long travel day, but we're back home, and we've just been like kicking butt since then. Just
working.
Got back into the swing of things. Of course, I had to restock our refrigerator, because that's what happens after you're gone. And then, work. What have you been working on?
Well, you know,
mastering stuff.
I have been mastering stuff, and that's been great. Before that, though, I had this really unexpected detour into what I have lovingly dubbed Sobriety Week.
It's been Sobriety Week.
I'm not sure what, but like starting with our trip home in that like 5.5-6 hour layover that we had, I spent, no joke, about 75 minutes of that talking with this guy who I know, who reached out to me, texted me earlier in the day being like, hey, can I talk to you about sobriety stuff? I'm super worried about my brother. Mm-hmm. We talked for like 75 minutes. The next day, I talked with his mom for about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And like those were two of the like 5 separate sobriety-related phone calls. I mean, I'm always on Facebook Messenger to support, being supportive of people, talking with people, you know, more like onesie-twosie back and forths, you know, about sobriety stuff. But this was like phone calls, like serious hours-long phone calls.
Yeah.
I talked with one woman on the phone multiple times for like an hour plus each time. I mean, it's just...
It's
overwhelming. There's so much in the air right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder why. Each of them are unrelated cases, but it's just like... Yeah, you're like you've been a magnet for that this week, or people have needed it this week, or something.
I mean, it's exactly why I put it out there so much that I'm sober and that I'm there for people, because I want people to do this, right? Like, if you're struggling with sobriety and I can be of service to you, I want to do that.
Yeah,
it's important to me, and I like it.
And it's also part of your own recovery.
That's it.
To be able to be of service to other people.
It is indeed the 12th step embodied. That's how you live that.
Yeah.
You know, you carry the message to other people. And that's great. And I'm happy to do it. But oh my gosh, like just the severity of all of it. You know, like I'll talk with people once or twice a month typically, but like five or six in a week, that's just
it's a lot.
Unprecedented.
You know what, something that happened that I was sort of like observing from the sidelines, you made a post about the fact that it's been sobriety week on Facebook, right? You mentioned that you've been having all these phone conversations with people, and it was really cool to see that there's a woman who commented on your thread.
Yes.
Who you have sort of counseled
a lot
the last couple of years in her own path towards sobriety.
Yeah.
And she chimed in saying, I'm also a voice if anyone wants to, you know, a non-judgmental ear for people looking into sobriety. Like, she's gotten herself to the point where she's wanting to help others too. And that
feels
just
confident and secure in what she knows about it. Yeah,
it's
great.
It was so cool to see that.
So good.
Yeah.
It's so neat. Rewarding. Because I was talking with her for, I mean, literally a year when she was just not sober.
Right.
And she would reach out to me a lot in that time period, and it just seemed like she was stuck and spinning her wheels, but I was just, you know, encouraging, and because that's what you do.
Yeah.
People don't, you don't get it immediately, you know
of
what I mean?
Course.
I didn't, none of us really do, you know? Like, it takes a while for the idea to seep in that maybe this is something you could even do, you know? You have to explore it a lot. And so for her now, I mean, then she got sober for real like a year and a half ago or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we've been talking steadily through that whole process, and now for her to be at this place where, like, she feels like it's a message she can carry.
I love it.
That's how this works.
That's how it's supposed to work.
Just pass from person to person.
So what is it like for you when you're having a conversation with somebody who's like really in it, you know? And like, do you find yourself transported back to the time in your life when you were at the place where they are?
Sure.
Do you feel like, what's the experience like for you?
You know, it's wonderful in one way because I'm so grateful that I'm sober.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like, something you'll hear in the rooms of AA is like a definition of like, people ask like, what's a sponsor and what's the definition of a successful sponsor-sponsee relationship?
And a sponsor is someone who helps someone work through the steps, right?
That's like right.
Someone with more experience in the program guiding you through.
And it should be noted that like, I'm not sponsoring any of these people, right? That's a really specific word and a really specific role.
Yes.
I'm more like mentoring.
Yeah.
But a sponsor is someone who helps you work the steps.
Yeah.
And the definition of one definition of a successful sponsor-sponsee relationship is a successful sponsor-sponsee relationship is one in which the sponsor remains sober.
Right.
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 The idea being that, like, ultimately, you've got to put your own oxygen mask on first.
Right.
You know, like, if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be in any shape to take care of anybody else.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm always really grateful for that, you know. But man, yeah, I mean, triggering's not the right word because like I'm not in a place where this stuff can trigger me, you know?
Right.
I'm very comfortable with it. I keep it really close. It's not scary or alien or foreign to me.
Yeah.
But it is for sure something I can still relate to so much. Mm. I mean, I just hear these people talking about how they feel inside and all the things they're trying and all the coping mechanisms they're trying. And it could have been me saying these words 16 years ago, you know? None of it works.
Yeah.
None of it works at all. And it's great to be able to be of service. And I always have to really, like, I try as hard as I can to, like, share in as in-depth a way as possible, like, my experience, you know. They say you share your experience, strength, and hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I do that. Mm-hmm. But it's always, like, I have to set this sort of silent intention inside myself, like, before I even start, be like, I just have to offer this with an open hand with the understanding that it probably won't take.
Yeah.
With, like, no expectations.
Right, right,
I mean, the odds are that it won't. You know what I mean? Like, most people don't get sober.
Right.
Like, that's the sad truth of it.
The stats aren't great.
Like, because it's really hard to do, and it requires you make a fundamental, a wholesale change in your life. And a lot of people just aren't willing to contemplate that.
And the wholesale change is vastly more than just not drinking.
Yeah.
Or using, or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's
The wholesale change is, a lot of internal work.
Yeah, it's spiritual in nature.
Yeah.
By which I don't mean religious. It's not religious.
Right.
It just means your spirit. You have to fix what's wrong in your spirit. And then the symptoms, the alcohol or the gambling or the porn or whatever it is, will naturally fix themselves.
Honestly, the idea of like offering without expectations, just offering yourself without, that concept, which I also learned from 12-step recovery, is something that I feel like has been useful to me in so many areas of my life.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, let's take the example of performing.
Yeah.
Like, all I can ever do when I show up to perform at a house concert is just to give myself and leave it there with an open hand. I have no idea how people are going to receive me. I have no idea what kind of feedback I'm going to get. Don't know if it's going to be a quote unquote successful show. You know, none of that. Is the message going to penetrate? Is it going to make a difference? Don't know.
Also not your problem.
Also not my problem. But seriously, the learning that in 12-step, like that's something that's really, really been helpful for me in my performing career. And in, you know, writing music, making new record, putting artwork out into the world, you know, releasing myself from the need to control the outcome.
Right.
And just focus my energy instead on giving of myself, of my whole self, as authentically as I can.
Yeah.
And as open-handedly as I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's true in relationships, you know? Like, every one of my relationships is better for having that kind of a mindset.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, just like making sure that you're okay no matter what someone else does, that's a big deal, right? Because then, like, you can be just, like, more chill with other people, too, if you're not placing all kinds of expectations on them, you know, for, like, how they're supposed to react to you, how they're supposed to interact with you.
Right.
Like, supposed, there's so many supposed in the world, you know, and people can get real wrapped around the axle.
Yeah.
Getting real worried about what other people should be doing.
Totally. I mean, and, like, in terms of my recovery, you know, the expectations are the root of resentments.
Sure.
And resentments are a big root of the problem for someone who's not operating from a healthy place.
Yeah.
You know, like, good lessons. So sobriety week. Yay.
Sobriety week. Hey, thank you to everyone who reached out to me. If any of you by any chance might be listening to this, thank you. Like, it means a lot for people to trust me in a vulnerable way. That's one big takeaway. You asked me what my takeaways were. Like, another one is like, how extraordinary it is that people, like, many of whom I, like, half of these people I've never met in person.
Yeah.
And, like, they're just willing to share their deepest, darkest fears with me.
Right.
That's so vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And that people trust
so
me in
courageous.
That way. It's so courageous. And it honors me so much that people would trust me in that way. Like, I just feel so grateful and humbled and, like, I don't know, it's just... It's lovely.
Yeah.
I don't know if honors was the wrong word there, but I'm just very grateful for it.
Yeah.
That's all I'm trying to express.
Got it.
So what do you think? Should we head into the break and then come back with power and powerlessness?
Oh, yeah. You know, and actually this topic idea sort of sprung in part from one of the conversations that you had with a person contemplating sobriety this week. The idea of finding power in powerlessness.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that you shared with me that in a conversation you had about this idea of powerlessness really just like rang true for me in an experience I had last week. And so it's going to be a good topic. I'm excited.
Right on. Cool. Well, let's head into a break and we'll be back in just a sec to talk about power and powerlessness.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. See you soon. Still here on the couch.
You haven't moved a bit, actually.
Nope.
So, cool.
If I didn't go anywhere...
Is it really a break?
Am I really back?
Yeah, so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Really, we were just sitting here while Flowers in the Flood was playing. It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
So, power and powerlessness. Why don't you set this up?
Okay, so you had shared with me in one of the conversations you had with someone this week that they were really struggling with the notion of admitting powerlessness.
Yeah.
over alcohol, which is one of the things that's like, it's like the beginning of 12-step recovery.
It's the first step.
It's to acknowledge that you're powerless.
Yeah.
Over this.
And she, like, just to support what you were just saying, to provide a little bit more context, like, whenever someone calls and wants to talk about sobriety, I always talk about AA because that's what worked for me, and I've seen it work for so many other people.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
And I, the reason it worked for me and I think works for other people is because it's methodical. It's just, it's not like voodoo or magic or religion or a cult. It's just like there's 12 steps and you do them in order with someone helping you.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
And it's just a systematic way to like become willing to explore vulnerably what's going wrong inside of you, mm-hmm. to then do that exploration and then to take action based on what you find to rid yourself of those things.
Right.
That's all it is.
Right.
Right. And, you know, I was mentioning this to her and she cut me off, you know, 3 seconds in to what for me could be a 15-minute talk, right? Like, I can't do it. I can't do the first step. I'm not willing to admit I'm powerless. She didn't say I'm not willing. She said, I'm not powerless.
And that's, when you shared that with me, that was actually a really, it's kind of a profound thing to say. Because like for a lot of people, and I think for a lot of women in particular,
mm-hmm.
getting to a place in your life where you feel like you are empowered is sometimes a really, really freaking hard journey.
Yes.
You know, and so like I heard you say that and I get it.
Yep, I get it too. So much.
100% get it.
Like she's a strong woman. Like she has like built herself up from like from just over the course of her life to a place where like she's in a really good job. She's really well respected. She makes a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. She has kids. She's the sole supporter of her kids. Like, mm-hmm. like she is one of those people who's like, you know, they say you can't do it all. She's kind of doing it all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she has built herself up to this place where like she really is super like empowered.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so for someone who maybe didn't feel that way to have gotten to where she's gotten herself, like the very idea, then you have to be like, oh, actually I'm powerless. Be like, screw that.
Well, totally. And even aside from just like the outward signs of like her quote unquote success in her life,
yep.
you know, just, I'm really talking about a more fundamental mindset of someone like, and I've talked about this on this podcast before, like it's been a real journey for me to get to a place in my life where I can say confidently that I have agency in my life.
Yeah.
You know, like that's not something that's been easy to come to me.
Right.
You know, and I think that's true for a lot of people. You know, we get to, you know, those of us who, like, for me, I've always been like a people pleasing type of a person, mm-hmm. and you know that tendency for me led down a path of people pleasing to such a degree that I gave away parts of my identity in order to make other people's to keep other people happy with mm-hmm. me, to maintain that flow of, you know, affection and approval that I so craved.
What Shannon's describing people is called codependency. If you feel like this, go to coda.org and see if you're a codependent.
It's true. So like the idea of coming around to the place having been in a place where I had given away so much of my identity and my choice and my agency to get to a place in my life where I can say confidently, I have agency.
Yeah.
I have power,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be confronted with the idea that you need to like acknowledge powerlessness,
mm-hmm.
Can be a really just dissonant sort of thing,
yeah.
you know? And so I got to thinking about her situation and it maybe I the word powerlessness is one that I used in a Facebook post like last week or so.
Yeah.
With regard to how I was feeling personally about the stuff going on in our government right now,
yeah.
I found myself on the day, I mean I knew it was going to happen last week when the Senate at the end of their not really a real trial of the president. The majority of senators, all Republicans except for one,
mm-hmm.
voted to not hold him accountable for his crimes.
Yep.
Man, that just, I knew that was coming.
Yep.
I knew that was how it was going to go down. We've all known that for months, right?
Of course.
That this is a party that has just forgotten that they have a choice other than to support this autocrat.
Yep.
And so we knew that was coming. And even though I knew it was coming, the day it happened, I just felt so deflated and sad and powerless. I felt powerless because here's this, I mean, I see, and we're seeing it borne out in the last, just in the last handful of days since his quote unquote acquittal. There have been some just scary maneuvers by this president to wield the Justice Department to benefit him politically.
Yeah.
I mean, like, serious, like,
shocking abuses of power.
An indication that they want to, that he's encouraging the military to punish that Colonel Vindman guy that testified in the trial. Like, just, yeah, abuses of power left and right. Like, they're not wasting any time.
No.
After this quote unquote acquittal to just continue abusing power because there's not enough people in the Senate willing to hold him accountable.
Right.
And it's just, it's really scary to me. So I you know, seeing those kinds of things start to happen, I felt myself feeling powerless over this, you know, our country sliding into authoritarianism.
Sure.
And that's terrifying. And I just felt like for a while I'm like, well, there's nothing I can do about it. I am powerless, you know? And then it occurred to me that like, it's helpful mm-hmm. if I can acknowledge that powerlessness, like just name it,
sure.
First of all, and then figure out where I do have power.
Yeah.
Even if it's small. And so like on that day when I was feeling that, I'm like, well, we can still vote in this country.
Yep.
That's still something that we're allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what if I just, you know, helped, you know, people that I know get motivated to get registered to vote, to check their registration because a lot of states have been purging people from their voter rolls.
Yep.
And so I made a post, you know, social media post about it. And like, as of this morning, it's been shared like 86 times or something, but mostly by people I don't know.
Yeah.
So clearly like it's made a little, you know, a little ripple.
Great.
And whatever. It's not much, but it felt like something that, okay.
It's better than zero though.
It's better than zero. And I find when I heard you use the word powerless, that word in your sobriety conversation, it reminded me of that day. And I'm like, okay, maybe there's actually a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
When we can acknowledge and name our powerlessness,
mm-hmm.
maybe then it allows us room to shift our focus onto the ways that in which we do have power.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like it's sort of like it feels like a paradox on the face of it,
mm-hmm.
but really that admission of powerlessness is maybe the first step to actually finding your power.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was thinking about it in relation to, there's someone that we're close to that you've been talking a lot with over the last week or so about a job situation.
Yes.
Do you want to describe that in general?
Yeah.
This relates to that situation, that circumstance too.
Yep. So thumbnail sketch is that this person has been in this essentially abusive job situation for years and years and years.
Yeah.
She's been with this company for like 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she, like back with the old owner, was the second highest person to the owner, right?
Right, right.
And then this other guy came in 10 years younger than her and 2 or 3 years less experience in this company. He came in after she'd been there 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came time for the old owner to sell the company,
mm-hmm.
he's a super sexist, misogynist, old school, like 85-year-old, just, you know, guy. And so, well, you don't sell your company to a woman. That's not something you do. And so he sold the company to this guy, the third in command, who's mm-hmm. like, you know, 10 years younger and less experienced.
Right, right.
And who has never run a company, has no management experience whatsoever. Like, he started with him, I think, literally as an intern. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, like, he's got absolutely no experience running a company and has taken it all out on this person who I think really, like, he perceives as a threat. And so it's just taken the shape of just constant, like, micromanagement and just demeaning,
mm-hmm.
Looking over the shoulder, setting micromanagey, unreasonable goals. Just, it's like Office Space. It's seriously, it's like really kind of like Kafka-esque in some ways, you know? Like requiring her to do so much reporting about the work she's doing to prove that she's doing the work she says she's doing and is being productive.
But she doesn't have time to do the work.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like this circular thing.
Right.
And
from my perspective, hearing her talk about it too, hearing the description of that, the working environment and the kind of ways in which, you know, she's been treated, it sounds abusive to me, you know.
Totally abusive.
There's, you know, she'll come with, you know, an idea about like how to, you know, streamline stuff or ask for what she needs in terms of a supportive environment, and mm-hmm. she gets gaslit, and it's like she needs this job. She needs this job, right? That's one of the...
She's got a family. She's got kids. It's a job. It's a thing.
It's one of the things that, you know, abusers take advantage of is
sure.
when you have a... When there's enough at stake for you to not really want to just walk away from the situation,
yeah.
they can use that to their advantage.
I mean, they call it financial abuse, right? It's the single reason why so many abused women stay in relationships with abusing men, but if they're not financially independent, right? They can't just walk away.
Right.
It's exactly the same dynamic.
Right. Abuse is an economic issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so... I just like over the years, you know, hearing her talk about it, like I always get the feeling like what she's never really used the word "I feel powerless," but that's the vibe I've gotten.
Well, because we keep talking with her about it, and it keeps being like, "You should just leave. You should clearly leave." You know what I mean? Like if you have a friend who's being abused by their partner, you're like, "You should just leave," and then they're like, "Oh, here's all the reasons I can't."
But it's also it's not always that simple,
right?
So you know. Both, but the feeling I've gotten over the years is that she has felt powerless.
Yeah,
in
trapped
this scenario. Yeah, trapped. I need the job, so I have to put up with this abuse, but it's ruining my life. But it's and then like last week she had a conversation with her boss that just was like maybe the straw that broke the camel's back or something. Like
it was so wild,
over the top, bad.
Yeah.
And ever since then, there's like something shifted. In our friend who like just like it became so completely aware like apparent how powerless she was to change the situation that like all of a sudden she became empowered to do something like a full acceptance of actually not I'm never going to change this situation okay well then what's next like
right.
How incredible is that?
Yeah.
To like that somewhere in the weight and the burden of just like accepting that you can't control your situation or you can't change it, that's the moment that you can like focus on where you do have power.
Like that's the key to your freedom.
It's wild.
Right? Acceptance.
Yeah.
Acceptance is the key.
Acceptance is
and
the
I think,
whole key.
You know, if we look at the flip side of what that implies, right? The flip side of that coin is I think maybe a lot of the time, you know, speaking personally, situations where I can't move forward, where I can't get out of a bad situation, where I can't like change something that's feeling bad is because I can't change it.
Right.
Because I have not yet accepted my powerlessness.
Right.
And as soon as you accept that you're powerless in a situation, you can't control it, what you do is you relinquish the idea of control. And as soon as you open your hand, like a hand that is open to let something go is also a hand that's open to receive something good.
Right.
And that's what's happening now.
Totally.
Like she's going out and looking for the next thing. And like that. And now that's the direction the energy's moving.
Yeah. Yeah. And she seems like almost happy to be doing it.
Oh yeah.
Which is
kind of stoked.
Like her mood is so totally drastically changed. You know, I think about it in terms of like my experience that I had last week feeling, you know, sad and powerless about the stuff happening in our government. And, you know, this is, there are a lot of folks, especially on social media, you'll come across people, you know, who want to post all these like really just, sensationalized like posts or memes about like the tyranny at our door, you know, like just and
it's not even like resistance grifting. It's like catastrophe grifting.
Well, and I feel like I have to admit, I think that I was in this place for a long time too, for a while anyways, during this, this administration.
It's not grifting if you're not trying to get something from it. So I should take that back.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But there's this living in a space of the catastrophe, of the fear, of the, you know, the overwhelming nature of it. I mean, it is bad. It is all that bad.
And indeed, it's arguably worse than 2017 when we were all the most freaked out.
Well,
ironically,
some of us were the most freaked out. Some of us are still really freaked out,
yep.
you know, but yeah, I mean, it's bad. There's no question about it. But I find myself, you know, when I see people engaging in this, like, you know, hair on fire, you know, world on fire, sky is falling, mm-hmm. you know, like kind of panicking about it.
Yeah.
I don't personally experience any sort of feeling of empowerment in that emotional space.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, for me, it feels a whole lot more productive and also sustainable psychologically and emotionally for me to acknowledge just how bad it is and just how much I don't have any control over this situation.
Yeah.
Because then it allows me to focus on what the small things I can do. And I feel better. It's not that the problem is gone.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't care.
Yeah.
It's just that staying in that catastrophe mentality, for me, it's like a dog chasing its tail
sure.
and not making any progress. Like it is maybe not. When I was in that place, I had not yet reached the point where I was willing to accept
mm-hmm.
this is the reality of things mm-hmm. right now.
And it does, like, that kind of behavior and engaging in that sort of circular behavior does, like, stimulate endorphins, right? Like, or whatever chemical. Like, it makes you feel a little bit better to blossom steam in that way. But also triggers, I think, probably some cortisol, right?
Oh my gosh, it's so stressful.
Yeah, it's really stressful. And I think that, you know, for me, like, a realization that I had, you know, around all that kind of stuff is, like, I've only got a limited amount of energy in my day. And in any given day, I have a finite amount of energy.
Yeah.
And every little bit of it that I spend just blowing off steam and freaking out about how things are, mm-hmm. is a bit of energy that then I can't spend doing something productive.
Right.
Which is like me literally disempowering myself. Like
right.
every time I engage in behavior like that, I'm taking away some of my own power and giving it to this bad force.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that's such a great way to describe it. That was my experience too. And you know, and that's not to say that I've like got this mastered, because certainly not.
No.
Like just last week I was in the catastrophe mode mm-hmm. for a while. And I had to like figure out how to not let that suck out all my energy and my power from me.
Yeah.
You know? So last week it was like, okay, well, let's try to make sure people are registered to vote. You know, like it's a tiny little thing. It's not a direct solution to the big problems that we have,
no.
you know, in the country, but it's a little thing, mm-hmm. you know? I don't know. I feel like it's this kind of concept. It's one that I've learned over the course of my career as an artist also, you know, for so many years, like living in Los Angeles and kind of being surrounded with this idea that there's a way to become successful in the music industry, TM, mm-hmm. you know, that, and, you know, and feeling like I had no power in that situation. Well, I just have to play at the right venues and hope the right person is there to discover me. And then,
yeah.
you know, that feeling of powerlessness, once I accepted it also and figured out where I do have power in my mm-hmm. career, led me on a path that, you know, I could never have predicted otherwise, mm-hmm. but it has been so much more fulfilling than trying to make it in a game where I don't write the rules. I don't maybe even know all the rules, you know, where I don't when I don't have any control of it at all.
Yeah.
You know, but acknowledging that you don't have control sometimes is just the thing you need to figure out where you do have agency.
I think that's absolutely right.
It's kind of life transforming in a way.
Yep, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, like bring this back around to like the to sobriety week.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm glad you did. Yeah.
It's funny, like I was thinking like. With my friend, I literally said this to her, my friend who like when I started talking about AA was like, I can't do it because I am not powerless. And then they ask you to admit you're powerless and I'm not powerless. And I was like, well, stop drinking then.
Huh.
Right?
Right. Because she called you with the idea that like, help, I can't stop drinking.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Please tell me how to do it. help me, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird, right? That just internal cognitive dissonance. I mean, and this is so common, right? This idea that, no, I'm not powerless, and also I can't stop drinking.
Right.
Literally subsequent sentences.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The disconnect.
Right. Right. But, you know, in recovery, like that admission of powerlessness is the thing that frees you to discover.
And that's what I tried to communicate. That's where the empowerment comes from, right? It's not admitting that you will never have any kind of power in any setting.
Right.
It's that you're powerless over alcohol. Mm-hmm. Like, it literally says that, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, that's the point of it. The point is not admitting mm-hmm. that we are powerless in our lives, period, and that we're subservient in a, you know, especially as women in a male-dominated society. That's not the messaging.
Right,
the messaging is that we can't stop drinking. We recognize we need help.
Right.
You know? And the irony is, and I think this is true for so many more things for me than just specifically related to drinking, is like those moments in which I do admit that I'm not in control of a situation are the freeing moments for me, are the moments in which I then can look at a broader range of options for how to deal with the situation, figure out where I do have power.
Exactly.
You know? And then proceed forward in a way that feels empowering.
Yes.
As opposed to just being constantly trapped and under something else's control.
Totally. I can't tell you how often and it's not like I recite this in my head, but the point of the Serenity Prayer, like the message of the Serenity Prayer, like enters my consciousness on a daily basis.
And
it's the fact that it's called a prayer is weird for me, especially someone who's used to be, you know, religious and is no longer religious. That word has a hang up for me.
Sure. Ironically, because I never went to church, I don't mind it because I've construed a secular version of what that word means.
Yeah, I guess it's more like a meditation. Maybe that's a better way of phrasing it for me. But and like the thing, it actually starts with, you know, the word God, which in sobriety circles doesn't necessarily mean a religious God. So we'll just put that aside also. But the message is this: God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah.
And like that idea, like sorting any situation into those categories. Is this something I can change? Yes or no? It's like a flow chart, right? Is this something I can change? Yes or no? Okay. It is something I can change? Well, great. Let's figure out what those changes are that I can make. It's not something I can change? Okay.
Oh.
Well, then I'm going to set it aside over here and put my energy over on this other side where I can make some changes in my life. You know, it's just, it's so useful. It's so useful and I'm grateful.
Yeah. Well,
and having that perspective.
And it's also like a huge relief because it like relieves you of the need to have to control a whole bunch of stuff.
Totally.
Which is great.
Totally.
Because frankly, I'm busy.
Well, and frankly, when I'm in that mindset, I'm just going to end up on my couch under a blanket and not want to do anything or face the world because it's depressing as can be.
Yeah.
Hey, good talk.
Good talk.
Thank you for being available to people for sobriety this weekend.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And for sort of that conversation wending its way to this one about where we find our power.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Right on. All right, people. So, hey, thank you for listening to the Misfit Stars podcast.
Thanks for listening.
We're so grateful you did that.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. First of all, thank you for listening. So good. Second of all, please leave a glowing 5-star review of this podcast on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher or wherever you listen.
It's helpful.
Yeah, it helps more people find it. You want that, right? You've listened all the way to the end. You're hearing my voice right now. Clearly, you've enjoyed this podcast. Maybe you would like other people to have this same pleasurable experience you just had. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's how you can
do that.
Go rate and review. Thanks. Second of all, if you would like to become a supporting member of the Misfit Stars podcast, oh my gosh, we would love that. Go to misfitstars.com/join if you're not yet a member and you can sign up. It's a way to support this podcast and to support more broadly what Shannon and I are doing with our lives. All of this work that we do, all of this outreach, all of this community building, this is one of the ways in which we support that. If you like that work and you want to be part of supporting it, we would be really grateful for that. Support levels are $5, $10, $20 bucks a month. You can pick one that fits within your budget. Thank you. It's a huge help.
Thank you so much.
Thirdly, if you are listening and you are already a supporting member, but you're thinking you might want to level up. Maybe you're at 5, but you want to go to 10, get that t-shirt. Maybe you're at 10, you want to go to 20, get the t-shirt and the mug.
What?
Right? Oh, yeah. By the way, if you're at 5 and you go to 20, you get the t-shirt and the mug in one fell swoop.
And the stickers, everything.
Everything. You get everything. You get all of it. Everything. You get 3 separate things in the mail at 3 different times. It's so exciting. It'll be like Christmas in your mailbox for like a week and a half. It's wonderful. You can go to misfitstars.com/level up. And you can just adjust yourself to whatever new level you think better represents how you want to participate.
Yeah.
And thanks.
Thank you so much. You guys, thank you so much for listening today. We'll be back again next week with more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the world will give us more opportunities to talk about meaningful things.
Life continues to happen.
It does.
It would be so nice to just push pause. I think when people say they want a vacation so often, I think what they mean is they just want the world to stop for 7 days. You know? Wouldn't that be great? I don't want to go anywhere. Huh. I just want things not to happen for a week and just to sit and rest. I want to hibernate is what I want.
If the world stopped spinning for 7 days, we would all float out into outer space and that would be the end of that.
Well, I think probably if it stopped spinning like immediately, we'd all be flung into space.
Is that what would happen? Ah, I need to talk to a physicist.
Well, I mean, we're rotating, right?
Oh.
We're rotating right now around the Earth's axis at a ridiculous rate of
speed.
But
the rotation is what informs gravity. So that's what my thought was, if it stopped rotating. We're gonna have to break this down with a physicist or something.
Mm.
Yeah, we'll work it out. We'll let you know what we find out next week.
Mm. Get right on that. Related, if you're a physicist and you have any clue what we're talking about, let us know. Okay, so we'll be back. Hope you all have a great week. Let's talk about this power and powerlessness stuff. All of y'all who are supporting members, let's talk about it in the private Facebook group. I would love to hear your thoughts
on
this. Thank you for listening. Thank you for spending some time with us. We appreciate you very much.
Take good care of yourselves, and we'll see you next week.
Can't wait. Love you guys.
Bye.
Bye.